It's time for a weekly look at the inner workings of Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer.
Congress continues to look at the country's response to Ebola, weighing increased funding and how to enact border screenings. We're also 13 days away from midterm elections. Most polls continue to show a Republican takeover of the Senate as likely.
And we'll take a look at diversity in the legislature. This week, Elizabeth Warren spoke up about sexism in the Senate. And when a new crowd moves into Washington after midterm elections, more Latino representatives are expected in their ranks.
Paul Singer joins us every week at this time. He's USA Today's politics editor. And Paul, it's good to have you back.
Nice to be on. Thanks a lot for having me.
So here we are, 2 weeks away from the midterms. Any seismic shifts or maybe minuscule shifts that we should be aware of as we head in?
Cannot come soon enough for me at this point. I don't know, seismic shifts. I mean, I think the number of races are beginning to show some form that may be interesting. I mean, we have a new poll out today that we've done in the Colorado Senate race, and it really does show a trend towards the Republican challenger, Cory Gardner. The Democratic incumbent, Mark Udall, has been struggling in that race. And all the polls, ours goes a little further. Ours suggests it's a 6 or 7 point lead for Gardner, but all the polls have been 3, 4, 5% lead for Gardner over the past several weeks. That begins to make you believe that that lead is baking in, and that we just changed our forecast for that race to leans Republican from pure toss-up. So that might be one in the GOP camp at this point.
And how big a deal is that when a race significantly starts to lean toward one direction?
Well, it's a big deal in the sense that you know, this is a race that a year ago Democrats were not at all concerned about. They had a solid incumbent who was well liked, and they did not expect this to be a battleground state. When Congressman Cory Gardner decided to leave the House of Representatives and run for the Senate, suddenly they had a good candidate for the Republicans, and it put that race on the map. So now it's gone from being a race that nobody considered really competitive to one that we now believe the Republicans are in the lead, essentially. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that he's going to win, right? But it certainly means that it's going to take more money for the Democrats to defend if they think they've got a chance. They're going to have to spend for it now a lot more than they would have what we thought they were going to do a year ago.
Senator Elizabeth Warren was in Colorado not long ago stumping for Udall. And when the heavy hitters come in like that, we've got Bill Clinton, for instance, who'll be heading to Wisconsin in the coming days. How big a deal is that? How significant is that in maybe moving the needle for a candidate?
It's really hard to tell. I mean, there's no doubt that it is most valuable for get-out-the-vote efforts, particularly in places with early voting, right? I mean, the Congressional Black Caucus has been down in Louisiana, and they're going to several other states over the past week because early voting has begun there. So if you can get people fired up in a rally and then basically shoot them out the door to the ballot box a couple hours later, that's very helpful. It is a real good get-out-the-vote technique. I don't know that, you know, having an endorsement from Elizabeth Warren helps you sway an undecided voter, right? I mean, it's like anything else. It's sort of hard to know. I will say that in that Colorado race, there was an endorsement from a newspaper that was considered a big deal because, again, it was an endorsement for Gardner, a newspaper that had previously endorsed Udall. It sort of showed the erosion of Udall's support. I don't know that these big sort of, forgive the word, celebrity endorsements matter in that sense of swaying public opinion, but they definitely help sort of galvanize your base and get people to the polls.
On another note, the White House began talks with Congress this week about increasing funding to respond to Ebola. What is the White House looking for from Congress?
We don't know yet. At the moment, they have said that they are well enough supplied, but they have about $1 billion to play with, and they've spent down, you know, not half of that yet. But it's going to be very clear that starting in December, when the new spending bill is required, that we're going to need to reassess priorities, and they are in negotiations with the House and the Senate appropriators over what would be available and what they're going to do. I mean, by and large, lawmakers in both parties, Republicans and Democrats, have said whatever we need to fight this, we will fight, and we will spend to fight Ebola. I just honestly don't know that they yet have a number or they yet know what the priority is. I think part of that's going to depend on seeing how the spread is, or if there is a spread at all in the United States.
Now, judging by media coverage and seeming levels of anxiety. It seems as though last week or maybe the week before was sort of the peak of anxiety about Ebola. Now, based on that, are we still seeing calls to close borders to West African countries?
Yeah. Yeah. There are still members of Congress who are saying we should close borders to West African countries. We should establish travel bans for anybody flying. And keep in mind that we're not really closing the borders. What we're doing is saying that we will not issue any new visas to countries where, particularly the three countries where there is a real outbreak of Ebola. I believe it's Liberia and Sierra Leone and the third one I'm blanking on at the moment.
Guinea.
Guinea, that's right. The issue there is instead what the administration is doing is beginning to funnel all passengers from those countries through airports, you know, specific airports that have protocols in place. I think there's five airports where you basically, if you're going to be flying to the U.S. from one of those countries, you'd have to come through, aside from passing through various screenings, you'd also have to come through those designated airports. So the administration is taking these calls seriously and is attempting to implement something that they think will calm the fears, but they really don't want to do a full-out visa ban from those countries. But I suspect that there's going to be another hearing on Friday in the House of Representatives. I suspect you'll hear more conversation about that topic then.
Now, is the White House taking hits on this one or any party in particular?
Well, you know, the White House takes hits because, of course, the White House is in charge. You know, I mean, by definition, whenever things go bad, people start to worry about the competence of the administration. You usually rely on government to solve problems for you, and sometimes they don't. I think certainly when there was a concern about nurses who had been treating an Ebola patient getting on airplanes, flying to Cleveland, and hanging out in a bridal registry shop for 3 hours, you wonder how the heck that's possible. That stuff rebounds really badly on the administration. Now, keep in mind, Obama then canceled a bunch of his own travel, stayed in Washington, and has sort of made every effort to say, I am engaged, I'm engaged, I'm engaged. He's meeting today with the new Ebola czar he's appointed, a guy named Ron Klain. The whole idea is to try and establish competence and management to try and sort of back down the public panic. Maybe that helps, maybe it doesn't. I will say, for what it's worth, that there is, you know, I think, tragically, Americans still have relatively short attention spans, and so, you know, a shooting in Canada today is going to be the head of the news. And may bump Ebola off the front pages for a day or two, and then maybe that starts to tamp down some of the fear.
Now, moving on to Senator Elizabeth Warren, she's had some interesting things today, to say about sexism in Congress. She said she's experienced it. She cited other women who've experienced sexist remarks in Congress. How has Congress evolved as more women join its ranks?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of sensitivity to this issue, or really more sensitivity to these kinds of issues, you know, over the past decades. You know, I mean, remember 1992, I believe, was the year of the woman. Suddenly we had, you know, a half dozen woman senators we hadn't had before. Now that number is up to, gosh, I believe we're in the 15, 16, 17 women senators, maybe up to 20 by next year. You know, so women are becoming an integrated part of the organization, which, by all accounts, has been an old boys club for 200 years. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. But it was 25 years ago that Senator Bob Packwood was finally drummed out of office for a repeated grabbing of staff and, you know, coming on to women. That was sort of the first eye-opening story about gender discrimination and abuse in the Senate. And my suspicion is, like any other place where you're dealing with, honestly, a bunch of 70-year-old white men, you are frequently dealing with people who may have still some fairly sexist attitudes and behaviors. I think the Senate is interested, is concerned, I believe that there are a lot of people in the Senate who are aware and trying to do something about this. And by the way, I think there are a lot of members of the Senate, men in the Senate, who really do respect their female colleagues. But I also believe that, like any big organization, you're never going to be able to be done with those kind of behaviors entirely. There will always be a little bit of it.
And Paul, as we wrap up, just real quickly, are we expecting a lot of new women in the Senate, in Congress?
Yeah, you're expecting several new women in the Senate. I know Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia is likely to be a new senator. There are a couple other, we expect another handful of Latino House members. There'll be a slightly larger Latino delegation, as it were, in the Congress next year. I believe we'll have two African-American senators elected at the same time for the first time in our history. So, you know, you're seeing diversity increase in the Congress as you see it increase around the country.
Paul, thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Veronica. Be well.
We've been speaking with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. He joins us every week at this time for a behind-the-scenes look at the country's legislature.